This is Ananinkai K, and you are listening to Voice of the Water Lily, an exploration of our ancestral music and history. We will be exploring music through the lens of history and history through the lens of music. Music is the chronicle of our story and a testament to our interconnectedness. By understanding our history, we understand ourselves, our ancestors, and our world better. It is my belief that music expresses what the soul means to say, what words fail to express. So, mi gente, join me on this musical and historical journey. So I put a lot of thought into if I should do this podcast about debunking myths and malicious propaganda about Che Guevara. On one hand, I didn't want to give the propaganda and the lies any more energy or any more time. Yet, at the same time, I still felt that I needed to debunk these lies and tell the truth. We're in an age where fake news and propaganda can disseminate faster than ever. Now, this isn't a new problem, but the speed at which these lies can spread on the internet is incredible, and it is something that is completely new. We're also living in an age where education and truth and facts and the way that history is taught, the realities of history are under attack. We have the metaphorical book burnings, and that's what I call this, the banning of books in places like Florida. And really, it's happening all over the country, though, as metaphorical book burnings. And that's what this is. And I look at the fact, the very, to me, disturbing fact that in Florida, and now the second state to approve this is Oklahoma, they are going to be using PragerU videos in classrooms to teach children social studies and history. That's a horrifying thought to me. If you don't know what PragerU is, go look it up. It is the most insane right-wing propaganda that you see out there on the internet. It's absolutely incredible the lengths at which they're going to stop the teaching of history. We need to know the truth. So the first lie, and this is going to be a series that I'm going to put out sporadically over time. The first lie, the first myth that I'd like to debunk about Che is that it's a very prevalent one that says that Che Guevara was racist. And this has been said so many times in recent years, it's really taken off online from that Huffington Post article a few years ago that said that he was racist to PragerU videos and all over the internet, all over social media and everywhere. This lie has taken off. So that is the first one that we are going to be debunking. And we're going to be talking, we're going to be telling the truth. And I'm going to use facts. I'm going to use evidence because I'm going to tell you something that perpetually annoys me is that we have one side that insists Che Guevara was this horrific murderer. He was racist. He was all these terrible things. He was just a terrible person. And then we have the other side who, and we have to just, you know, give it to them that they tried to defend him. But at the same time, there is a lack of understanding of the facts. There's a lack of understanding who, as I said recently, the man and the revolutionary Che Guevara really are. And so all these things go into it. So what I want to do, let's present the facts. Let's talk about it. Okay, people are saying that Che Guevara was racist. Well, let's look at some evidence and let's see what the evidence says.
En todos los idiomas hay muerte.
of Silvio Rodriguez with America, Te Hablo de Ernesto. And we are going to be talking about Ernesto. We're going to be talking about Che. So the propaganda that has been circulated mostly recently on the internet says that Che Guevara was racist. He hated black people. He said and wrote racist things. He also, they say, hated indigenous people and constantly showed contempt for them. Let's talk about the truth behind that myth. So in the Motorcycle Diaries, you can go read this. A 23-year-old Ernesto Guevara did undoubtedly write the following, and I quote, "The blacks, those magnificent examples of the African race who have maintained their racial purity thanks to their lack of affinity with bathing, have seen their territory invaded by a new kind of slave, the Portuguese. The black is indolent and a dreamer, spending his meager wage on frivolity or drink. The European has a tradition of working and saving, which has pursued him as far as this corner of America and drives him to advance himself even independently of his own individual aspirations." End quote. This is obviously incredibly racist, and it is absolutely undeniable that Che did write that in his Motorcycle Diaries. However, I think we need a little bit of context to understand why he thought this way and the society that he grew up in, the society that he was living in. So let's remember, he's 23 years old. Che Guevara came from an upper-class family. He had this sheltered life, and he was in an incredibly racist country, Argentina. He had, at this point, no experience of life, least of all the horrors of racism. And these were the typical backwards thoughts of an upper-class Argentine at this time, who had never seen the world. And in all honesty and in all probability, he had probably never met a black person in his life. And if we look into the history of race and racism in Argentina, this actually becomes abundantly clear. And I'm going to give you a little bit of context to better understand this. Argentina is still the whitest country in South America, with 0.365% of Argentines identifying as Afro-Argentinian. And a variety of factors contributed to this, given that just 150 years ago, one-third of the population identified as black. This drastic decrease was due in part to massive disproportionate casualties among black Argentines during the war with Paraguay. Many black Argentines also fled to Brazil and Uruguay because they were more welcoming of them. And in 1871, an outbreak of yellow fever and cholera decimated the black population of Buenos Aires. Many claim that this was an attempt to commit genocide on the part of the incredibly racist president, Domingo Faustino Sarmiento, 1868 to 1874. Black Argentines were also convicted of crimes they had little or no part in and disproportionately executed. All these factors led to a dramatic decrease in the black population of Argentina and contributing and creating a deeply, deeply ingrained racist attitudes towards black people in Argentina. These ideas were widely accepted and rarely challenged. This context is important in understanding why Che wrote that aforementioned repugnant, racist quote. And yes, it was Ernesto Guevara who wrote those widely held despicable ideas. But it was Che who returned from that trip a new person who could barely recognize his past self. At the end of the Motorcycle Diaries, he writes, quote, "The person who wrote those words died upon landing once more in Argentina. I'm not me. At least I'm not who I was before. This aimless wandering around our great America changed me more than I thought." End quote. There's also another frequently touted quote by propagandists that says, quote, "We are going to do for the blacks exactly what blacks did for the revolution, by which I mean nothing," end quote. Not a single shred of evidence exists that Che ever said this. And in fact, this was very probably invented completely by propagandist and well-known author and liar Humberto Fontova, who made up this quote and many others in a book that he wrote called Exposing the Real Che Guevara. Every other authenticated quote that we can find from Che shows exactly the opposite of this sentiment. And this is when it becomes clear that Che left those racist notions behind somewhere along his epic and life-changing journey through South America, and eventually when he joined the Cuban Revolution. By that point, these notions were completely gone, and we see that very clearly. On the 28th of December 1959, Che spoke at Universidad de las Villas after receiving an honorary doctorate there. This is in Cuba, by the way. And he says, quote, "So what must I say about the university's fundamental duty? It's article number one in this new Cuba. What I must say is that the university must color itself black and color itself mulatto, not just the students, but also professors," end quote. So this is really a clear example where Che espouses desire and mission to integrate schools and universities in Cuba. And in fact, he worked tirelessly advocating for the integration of schools in Cuba and successfully doing so. That was one of the first things that the revolutionary government did. Here we have another example. On the 8th of August, 1961, in Uruguay, Che said the following. Before I read this quote, I just like to make a note. It's actually kind of a translation note. But in these quotes that I'm going to read, you'll probably hear the use of the term blacks, which is, of course, widely considered dated and is not used. And it's not a word that we use today. However, not only was it common at the time that Che was speaking, but also it's a little bit of a translation error because the direct translation of the original Spanish, which would be negros, if it was translated properly in this context, it would actually mean a black person. So it just, in translation, it's often translated to just saying blacks, but if it was translated correctly in these quotations, it would say it would mean black people. And that's how Che was saying it in the original Spanish. But I'm going to read this quote from 1961 in Uruguay. He said, "It, the revolution, instituted many measures to affirm the dignity of the human being. Among the first of these was the abolition of racial discrimination, which existed in our country. The beaches of our island were not for blacks or poor or the poor to swim at because they belonged to some private club visited by tourists who did not like to swim with black people. Our hotels, Havana's great hotels, which were built by foreign companies, did not allow black people as guests because tourists from other countries did not like it. This is the way that our country was," end quote. And then, probably one of the greatest examples of Che speaking out against racism unequivocally was his 1964 speech at the United Nations. And in fact, you don't have to take it from me. I'm not reading a quote. I'm going to let you hear Che in his own voice saying and condemning unequivocally apartheid, and then I'm going to translate.
Una vez más, elevamos nuestra voz para alertar al mundo sobre lo que está ocurriendo en Sudáfrica. La brutal política del apartheid se aplica ante los ojos de las naciones del mundo. Los pueblos de África se ven obligados a soportar que en ese continente todavía se oficialice la superioridad de una raza sobre otra, que se asesine impunemente en nombre de esa superioridad racial. Las Naciones Unidas no harán nada para impedirlo.
And now I'm going to translate for anyone who does not understand Spanish. This is what Che just said. Quote, "Once again, we speak out to put the world on guard against what is happening in South Africa. The brutal policy of apartheid is applied before the eyes of the nations of the world. The peoples of Africa are compelled to endure the fact that on the African continent, the superiority of one race over another remains official policy, and that in the name of this racial superiority, murder is committed with impunity. Can the United Nations do nothing to stop this?" And then later on, in that same speech, he talks about the United States' systemic racism and the repression of the civil rights movement. Take a listen.
Los Estados Unidos intervienen en América invocando la defensa de las instituciones libres. Llegará el día que esta asamblea adquiera aún más madurez y le demande al gobierno norteamericano garantías para la vida de la población negra y latinoamericana que vive en este país, norteamericanos de origen o adopción, la mayoría de ellos. ¿Cómo puede constituirse en gendarme de la libertad quien asesina a sus propios hijos y los discrimina diariamente por el color de la piel? Quien deja en libertad a los asesinos de los negros, los protege además y castiga a la población negra por exigir el respeto a sus legítimos derechos de hombres libres. Comprendemos que hoy la Asamblea no está en condiciones de demandar explicaciones sobre estos hechos, pero debe quedar claramente sentado que el gobierno de los Estados Unidos no es gendarme de la libertad, sino perpetuador de la explotación y la opresión contra los pueblos del mundo y contra buena parte de su propio pueblo.
So here's what Che just said. The United States intervenes in Latin America, invoking the defense of free institutions. The time will come when this assembly will acquire greater maturity and demand of the U.S. government guarantees for the life of blacks and Latin Americans who live in that country, most of them U.S. citizens by origin or adoption. Those who kill their own children and discriminate daily against them because of the color of their skin. Those who let the murderers of blacks remain free, protecting them and furthermore punishing the black population because they demand their legitimate rights as free men. How can those who do this consider themselves guardians of freedom? We understand that today the assembly is not in the position to ask for explanations of these acts. It must be clearly established, however, that the government of the United States is not the champion of freedom, but rather the perpetrator of exploitation and oppression against the peoples of the world and against a large part of its own population. And in that 1961 speech in Punta del Este, Uruguay, in August of 1961, he then again decries racism in America. And he says, the National General Assembly of the People of Cuba, confident that it is expressing the general opinion of the peoples of Latin America, reaffirms that democracy is not compatible with financial oligarchy, with discrimination against blacks and the outrages of the Ku Klux Klan, depriving the world for years of the marvelous voice of Paul Robeson. And what I think really is that the story of Che exemplifies the ability for a human being's ideas and beliefs to change and evolve. And really, it shows Che's own ability to self-reflect. It is an example that ideas formed from ignorance can be changed. And in fact, it is an example that there is no excuse for racism. Despite the time and place that he grew up in, Che was able to change those notions that had been ingrained in him by society. It's an inspiring story about the ability of a human being to undergo enormous metamorphosis when confronted by the humanity of those that they had been taught were inherently beneath them. And it's an example of the human ability to transform.
El silencio del monte va preparando un adiós. La palabra que se dirá, in memoriam será la explosión. Se perdió el hombre de este siglo allí, su nombre y su apellido son fusil contra fusil. Se quebró del viento al sur y sobre la primera cruz despierta la verdad. Todo el mundo tercero va a enterrar su dolor con granizo de plomo hará su agujero de honor, su canción. Dejarán el cuerpo de la vida allí, su nombre y su apellido son contra fusil. Cantarán su luto de hombre y de animal, y en vez de lágrimas echar, con plomo llorarán. Alzarán al hombre de la tumba al sol, y al nombre se repartirán fusil contra fusil. Fusil contra fusil.
The song we just heard there, by the way, was Fusil contra Fusil, Silvio Rodriguez, One last piece of purported evidence of Che's racism was touted by Marco Rubio in 2013, and it actually comes from a 1965 journal entry where Che wrote, quote, "Given the prevailing lack of discipline, it would have been impossible to use Congolese machine gunners to defend the base from air attack. They did not know how to handle their weapons and did not want to learn." End quote. Now, nowhere in this passage, by the way, that is a very real passage from his Congo diary. You can read it in the diary. He did write it. However, nowhere in this passage does Che say that their lack of discipline has anything to do with their race. In fact, I think anyone who reads racism into this passage should examine their own unconscious racism. Che kept diaries his whole life, yet nowhere in his Congolese diary from 1965 does he ever make a single racist comment about his Congolese comrades. And also, more evidence against Che's racism comes from not his words, but his actions. In 1965, Che traveled with over 100 Afro-Cubans to the Congo and risked his life to take part in the Simba Rebellion, making good on his resounding words to the UN the year before, where he said all free men of the world must be prepared to avenge the crime of the Congo. Also, Che's translator, Freddy Ilanga, said that he showed the same respect to black people as he did to white people. And he spoke of the issue of what had happened in the Congo at length at the UN, and here we're going to hear another quote, another audio recording from that speech at the UN, where he condemns the role of imperialist countries in overthrowing the Congolese leader Patrice Lumumba. Take a close listen.
Quería referirme específicamente al doloroso caso del Congo, único en la historia del mundo moderno, que muestra cómo se puede burlar con la más absoluta impunidad, con el cinismo más insolente, el derecho de los pueblos. Las ingentes riquezas que tiene el Congo y que las naciones imperialistas quieren mantener bajo su control son los motivos directos de todo esto. En la intervención que hubiera de hacer a raíz de su primera visita a las Naciones Unidas, el compañero Fidel Castro advertía que todo el problema de la coexistencia entre las naciones se reducía al problema de la apropiación indebida de riquezas ajenas. Y así a la advocación siguiente: cese la filosofía del despojo y cesará la filosofía de la guerra. Pero la filosofía del despojo no solo no ha cesado, sino que se mantiene más fuerte que nunca. Y por eso, los mismos que utilizaron el nombre de las Naciones Unidas para perpetrar el asesinato de Lumumba, hoy, en nombre de la defensa de la raza blanca, asesinan a millares de congoleños. ¿Cómo es posible que olvidemos la forma en que fue traicionada la esperanza que Patricio Lumumba puso en las Naciones Unidas? ¿Cómo es posible que olvidemos los rejuegos y maniobras que sucedieron a la ocupación de ese país por las tropas de las Naciones Unidas, bajo cuyos auspicios actuaron impunemente los asesinos del gran patriota africano? ¿Cómo podremos olvidar, señores delegados, que quien desacató la autoridad de las Naciones Unidas en el Congo, y no precisamente por razones patrióticas, sino en virtud de pugnas entre imperialistas, fue Moisés Tshombe, que inició la secesión en Katanga con el apoyo belga? ¿Y cómo justificar, cómo explicar que al final de toda la acción de las Naciones Unidas, Tshombe, desalojado de Katanga, regrese dueño y señor del Congo? ¿Quién podría negar el triste papel que los imperialistas obligaron a jugar a la Organización de Naciones Unidas?
So here is what Che just said. Quote, "I would like to refer specifically to the painful case of the Congo, unique in the history of the modern world, which shows how, with absolute impunity, with the most insolent cynicism, the rights of peoples can be flouted. The direct reason for all this is the enormous wealth of the Congo, which the imperialist countries want to keep under their control. In the speech he made during his first visit to the United Nations, Compañero Fidel Castro observed that the whole problem of coexistence among peoples boils down to the wrongful appropriation of other people's wealth. He made the following statement: "End the philosophy of plunder, and the philosophy of war will be ended as well." But the philosophy of plunder has not been ended. It is stronger than ever. And that is why those who use the name of the United Nations to commit the murder of Lumumba are today, in the name of the defense of the white race, murdering thousands of Congolese. How can we forget the betrayal of the hope that Patrice Lumumba placed in the United Nations? How can we forget the machinations and maneuvers that followed in the wake of the occupation of that country by UN troops, under whose auspices the assassins of this great African patriot acted with impunity? How can we forget, distinguished delegates, that the one who flouted the authority of the UN in the Congo, and not exactly for patriotic reasons, but rather by virtue of conflicts between imperialists, was Moise Tshombe, who initiated the secession of Katanga with Belgian support? And how can one explain that at the end of all the United Nations activities there, Tshombe, dislodged from Katanga, should return as the Lord and Master of the Congo? Who can deny the sad role that the imperialists compelled the United Nations to play? He then continued speaking of the crisis in the Congo, and he says the following.
Para colmo de escarnio, nos arrojan ahora al rostro estas últimas acciones que han llenado de indignación al mundo. ¿Quiénes son los autores? Paracaidistas belgas transportados por aviones norteamericanos que partieron de bases inglesas. Nos recordamos que ayer casi veíamos a un pequeño país de Europa, trabajador y civilizado, el Reino de Bélgica, invadido por las hordas hitlerianas. Amargaba nuestra conciencia al saber de ese pequeño pueblo masacrado por el imperialismo germano, y lo veíamos con cariño. Pero esta otra cara de la moneda imperialista era la que muchos no percibíamos. Quizás hijos de patriotas belgas que murieran por defender la libertad de su país son los que asesinaran a mansalva a millares de congoleños en nombre de la raza blanca. Así como ellos sufrieron la bota germana, porque su contenido de sangre aria no era suficientemente elevado. Nuestros ojos libres se abren hoy a nuevos horizontes y son capaces de ver lo que ayer nuestra condición de esclavos coloniales nos impedía observar, que la civilización occidental esconde bajo su vistosa fachada un cuadro de hienas y chacales. Porque nada más que ese nombre merecen los que han ido a cumplir tan humanitarias tareas al Congo. Animal carnicero que se ceba en los pueblos inermes, eso es lo que hace el imperialismo con el hombre. Eso es lo que distingue al blanco imperial. Todos los hombres libres del mundo deben aprestarse a vengar el crimen del Congo. Quizás muchos de aquellos soldados convertidos en subhombres por la maquinaria imperialista piensen de buena fe que están defendiendo los derechos de una raza superior. Pero en esta asamblea son mayoritarios los pueblos que tienen sus pieles tostadas por distintos soles, coloreadas por distintos pigmentos, y han llegado a comprender plenamente que la diferencia entre los hombres no está dada por el color de la piel, sino por las formas de propiedad de los medios de producción, por las relaciones de producción.
So Che continued, and here's what he just said. And as if this were not enough, we now have flung in our faces these latest acts that have filled the world with indignation. Who are the perpetrators? Belgian paratroopers carried by U.S. planes who took off from British bases. We remember it as if it were yesterday that we saw a small country in Europe, a civilized and industrious country, the Kingdom of Belgium, invaded by Hitler's hordes. We were embittered by the knowledge that this small nation was massacred by German imperialism, and we felt affection for its people. But this other side of the imperialist coin was one that many of us did not see. Perhaps the sons of Belgian patriots who died defending their country's liberty are now murdering in cold blood thousands of Congolese in the name of the white race, just as they suffered under the German heel because their blood was not sufficiently Aryan. Our free eyes open now on new horizons and can see what yesterday, in our condition as colonial slaves, we could not observe. That Western civilization disguises beyond its showy facade a picture of hyenas and jackals. That is the only name that can be applied to those who have gone to fulfill such humanitarian tasks in the Congo, a carnivorous animal that feeds on unarmed people. That is what imperialism does to men. That is what distinguishes the imperial white man. All free men of the world must be prepared to avenge the crime of the Congo. Perhaps many of those soldiers who were turned into subhumans by imperialist machinery believe in good faith that they are defending the rights of the superior race. In this assembly, however, those peoples whose skins are darkened by a different sun, colored by different pigments, constitute the majority. They fully and clearly understand that the difference between men does not lie in the color of their skin, but in the forms of ownership of the means of production, in the relations of production. So tell me in a good conscience, listen to those words, and please tell me, are those the words of a white supremacist? A racist? In good conscience and in the spirit of truth, let's look at those words. Listen to them again. Listen to what he's saying, and please try and tell me that those are the words of a racist, of a white supremacist. I think one of the most powerful parts about that last quote was when he says, a carnivorous animal that feeds on unarmed people, that is what imperialism does to men. That is what distinguishes the, quote, imperial white man. I think that is so powerful because we see just how much he was condemning white supremacy, condemning racism. And he ends this part of the speech by extending a hand of friendship and support to other peoples under the boot of colonialism. Most of the countries that he lists are African nations and colonies. And he says,
la delegación cubana hace llegar su saludo a los pueblos de Rhodesia del Sur y África Sudoccidental oprimidos por minorías de colonos blancos. A Basutolandia, Bechuania y Suazilandia, a la Somalia francesa, al pueblo árabe de Palestina, a Adén y los protectorados, a Omán y a todos los pueblos en conflicto con el imperialismo o el colonialismo, y les reitera su apoyo.
The Cuban delegation extends greetings to the people of southern Rhodesia and southwest Africa, oppressed by white colonist minorities. To the peoples of Basutoland, Bechuanaland, Swaziland, French Somaliland, the Arabs of Palestine, Aden, the protectorates, Oman, and to all peoples in conflict with imperialism and colonialism, we reaffirm our support to them. And I think the UN speech is probably one of the greatest pieces of evidence to show just how Che combated white supremacy, combated racism, combated all of these things in an incredibly powerful way. And as I said, the biggest piece of evidence, though, comes from his actions where he actually risked his life. He went to the Congo to be part of the Simba Rebellion, to provide support in the way he could for their attempt to regain justice and to be free of imperialism. And then I wanted to also address now the other claim. As I said in the beginning, there's also those who say, you'll see if you watch that PragerU video, you can search it on YouTube. It's just PragerU Che Guevara. Just search it and you'll see what I'm saying. They have so many different lies that they say about Che in that video. One of them, so they say he's racist. They, of course, share the quote that I shared in the beginning from the Motorcycle Diaries. They, however, fail to share any of the other quotes that I've just read to you and that you've just heard. But they also say that he showed contempt and hatred for indigenous people. Not one quote, statement, diary entry, letter, speech, or even a secondary source or someone who claims to have heard Che say this says that Che hated or was racist towards indigenous people. Che, however, did write in his Motorcycle Diaries, the deeper we go into the Andes, Peru, the more indigenous people we encounter who are homeless in their own land. Doesn't sound like contempt to indigenous people. He's actually acknowledging the fact that these people had had their land stolen from them. Another often repeated claim is that Che said Mexicans were a band of illiterate Indians, and I quote, It remains completely unverified, but has been repeated tens of times on the internet, yet there's not one source for this information. Not one person claims to have heard him say this or any other disparaging claims about indigenous people or Mexicans. There's no written evidence of it at all. But what I will say is I found something interesting on the internet. And when I was doing the research for this podcast, I found that if you search just the search terms Che Guevara racist in Google, the top search results are articles without any authenticated sources and sometimes no sources at all. And these articles, like the often regurgitated HuffPost article, which has been used all over the internet as if it's a primary source by many to justify calling him racist, they take quotes out of context, use sources written by propagandists, and completely unverified and false information. Yet, if you search Che Guevara against racism, Che Guevara anti-racist, all these things, you'll find the exact same articles that the search term Che Guevara racist returns. Not one of the quotes that I've listed here that I've read that you've heard Che actually saying come up. And while the unfounded and misleading claims about Che's racism are easy to find, his words denouncing racism time and time again are conveniently left out. But this really is the nature of propaganda. And it really is just another attempt to slander Che Guevara instead of looking at the actual facts here. That's why it's important to do this. That's why it's important to look for the truth, because as time goes on, our history gets more and more distorted. We don't know what we can believe. We don't know what is true. So that's why it's important to talk about these things. Let's put the evidence on the table, because as I've said this several times already, we have the one side that'll say all these terrible things about Che. He was a terrible murderer, racist, all these things. There's a list a mile long of things that they accuse him of. And then we have the other side that'll simply just try to defend him without evidence, without facts. They won't try to defeat these lies logically. They simply just will kind of respond to things like, oh, he was in a revolution, that's why he had to do, whatever it may be. I know one of the most often repeated claims is that Che Guevara was a mass murderer. And then there are people that'll say, well, he was in a revolution, he had to do it. It's like, well, that claim, by the way, that is a topic for another episode, is also false. It's not grounded in facts. If we actually look at it, if we actually just look at the facts. So in response to the claims that Che wrote and spoke extensively about white supremacy, he in fact did. He wrote, spoke, and acted in the defense of victims of white supremacy and denounced the system at every turn. He really dealt blows to the ugly beast every chance he got. I think propaganda, lies, myths, and the general distortion of our history must be combated, it could not be allowed. It is really unacceptable in any way. So just being a small part of that, just putting this out there, is very important to me. And I do hope that you have enjoyed hearing this episode, joining me again this week. Thank you so much for joining me, as always. And look out, because there's going to be a lot more episodes like this as we continue on our mission to find the truth, to talk about the truth, and to tell our history in an honest way. I'm going to leave you with a song here, Vicente Falú, Una Canción Necesaria. And as Vicente Falú says in the beginning of this song, Al Che, no in memoriam. We remember Che today and always his contributions, and we seek to know the truth and to really, in a way, defend his memory and his legacy from slander, from lies, and from those who seek to tear down the example of this symbol of justice, of equality, and someone who was undoubtedly and fundamentally motivated by love. Until next time, con mucho, mucho cariño, keep dancing, keep honoring your ancestors. Chao, mi gente.
Al Che, no in memoria. Tu piel ligada al hueso se perdió en la tierra. La lágrima, el poema y el recuerdo están labrando sobre el fuego el canto de la muerte con ametralladoras doradas desde ti. Y aquí, a cada noche se busca en tus libros el propósito justo de toda acción y se abre tu memoria a todo aquel que renace, pero nunca falta alguien que te alce en un altar y haga leyenda tu imagen formadora, y haga imposible el sueño de alcanzarte, y aprenda algunas de tus frases de memoria, para decir seré como él sin conocerte, y lo pregone sin pudor, sin sueño, sin amor, sin fe. Pierdan tus palabras sentido de respeto hacia el hombre que nace cubierto de tu flor. Algún poeta dijo y sería lo más justo: desde hoy nuestro deber es defenderte de ser Dios.
Keep dancing, keep honoring your ancestors con mucho, mucho cariño. Chao, mi gente. If you like that show, please don't hesitate to reach out to me and leave me a voice message on Anchor. There is a link up in the description. You can also reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Voice of the Water Lily, or check out my blog, voiceofthelily.water.blog. You can leave me a message on any of those platforms. And please reach out. Let me know what you think of the show. If you have any suggestions, song requests, or anything, please reach out to me. And also, if I got something wrong and you want to correct me, please don't hesitate to reach out. Until next time, ciao.